It is time for our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, a candid and open conversation discussion regarding how best the Jamaican government should determine or assign cabinet ministers to ministries with portfolio. Our very special guest this morning, he is an author of 7 books. In 2020, he was named the most outstanding researcher. Anthony Turner, our guest has arrived. Please introduce our guests.
Well, ask our special guest on Grooving Radio this morning. His name is Dr. Knute Thompson, and he's a senior lecturer in educational policy planning and leadership and head of the Caribbean Center for Educational Planning at the University of the West Indies Mona campus. And Dr. Thompson is a leadership coach and a certified management consultant who has spearheaded the founding of the Caribbean Leadership Reimagination Initiative and the Caribbean Center for Educational Planning. And as you said, Rasclaim, he's the author of 7 books. And Dr. Thompson is a social activist and public intellectual who believes the role of an academic is inherently that of a social change agency. And Dr. Thompson advocates the leadership philosophy of reimagination, which he first articulated in his 2013 book, Leadership Reimagination, a Premier of Principles and Practices. And Dr. Thompson's work has been recognized by his peers, and he has received several awards, including in 2021, finalist Vice Chancellor's Award for Excellence, All-Round Outstanding Performance. And in 2020, he received the Principal Award, Most Outstanding Researcher. So we welcome Dr. Thompson to Grooving Radio Mic Check this Saturday morning.
Good morning, Dr. Thompson. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Thank you very much. And thanks for your very extensive profile and welcome.
Is that you alone, Dr. Thompson? Is that one person? How is Jamaica this morning, Dr. Thompson?
From where I sit, there are very clear skies. There's anticipation of rain. That's on the weather side. On the social side, there's news this morning of a $7 million drug bust. I don't know if you have seen that coming across the wires earlier this morning. $7 billion drug bust.
Wow.
And we continue to struggle with the, might I say, the efficacy, the rightness of using states of emergency as a crime fighting tool. The issues remain unresolved. This past week, you might have heard also of the back and forth a bit, somewhat unfairly, between the Minister of Constitutional and Legal Affairs and the Leader of the Opposition concerning the naming of a committee, a joint select committee, I think it is, to lead on the process towards a republic status. Truth is that the documentation provided by the Leader of the Opposition shows that he has been seeking to get the minister's response to some issues from as far back as June.
Wow.
But only in December did the minister respond. And then two weeks later, she goes to Parliament to say that the opposition has not been cooperative. They may have to proceed without the opposition. I have recommended to her that in light of the evidence that, in fact, the Leader of the Opposition has been seeking her response, and she should really clarify the facts and accept that there has been some fail on her part. I think the bottom line issue, though, the bigger issue, is that the government seems to be of a view that, notwithstanding our pursuit of republic status, we would retain the Privy Council as a final court of appeal.
Right.
And the opposition is of the view that we should withdraw from the Privy Council once to become a republic.
Republic, right. Hey.
So that's a bit on what's happening in Jamaica this morning.
Ah, more to come on that, because, and that's where we want to end the conversation, you know, this Saturday morning, in terms of Jamaica going republic. It's almost a year now since the PM says Jamaica is letting go of the monarchy. But the our presentation this morning, in light of conversations that are now happening in Jamaica about shuffling of cabinet ministers, it brings us to this discussion this morning. A candid and open discussion regarding how the Jamaican government should determine and or assign cabinet ministers to ministries with portfolio. And that is where I want to start this morning, Dr. Canoe Thompson. And, you know, my first question to you, Dr. Thompson, how should the government assign ministers, understanding that loyalty cannot be the only qualifying factor here? It seems that we've taken that road too often, loyalty. Your thoughts. Right. How should
so
they do?
As you would be aware, the Constitution sets out the parameters for the appointment of ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And it says specifically that the ministers shall be appointed by the Prime Minister from among the members who have been returned to the House. And also that the Prime Minister may appoint no less than two,
mm-hmm.
but no more than four members from the Senate. So there is a very narrow prescription under the existing constitutional arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
So the only non-elected person who may be appointed to the cabinet would be a person who has been rooted through the Senate and is now a member of the House of Representatives. So broadly speaking,
mm-hmm.
only members of the House of Representatives can be appointed.
Mm.
That's one. The second consideration is that whereas the representatives in the House of House may come with different skills and competences, the range of portfolio responsibilities are not always represented in terms of the technical competences that a minister has. So, for example, a Percival Bradrick, a successful dentist, was a minister of agriculture. A Seymour Mullins,
mm-hmm.
who was a land surveyor, was a minister of finance. A Hugh Small was a lawyer and was himself a minister of finance.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward Siaga, who was a sociologist, was minister of finance and minister of development.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I think can be done or should be done is that the government, the prime minister, should, or the leaders of parties, should seek to select persons for candidacy in general elections who bring certain skills.
Yes.
So that at the time they are to appoint them or to pull together a cabinet,
mm-hmm.
they have a range of skills.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the first things that can be done. A longer term thing that can be done is for the Constitution to be amended.
Mm-hmm.
So as to, and I think this, in my view, this is a fundamental necessary step that should be taken.
Okay.
So that the cabinet is not chosen from the representatives. The representatives retain their responsibility as being representatives for the various constituencies.
Right.
But the cabinet would be chosen from among non-elected persons.
Right.
who would be accountable to the Prime Minister, not to their constituencies,
mm-hmm.
and who could, well, under the current arrangement, a Prime Minister can fire any minister, but at least if the selection is being done from among experts who are not members of Parliament, then the Prime Minister can select a doctor to oversee health,
mm-hmm.
whether the doctor is a specialist doctor or doctor in primary care and knows about epidemiology and so on.
Right.
He can select somebody with a finance background to finance, somebody with agriculture to do agriculture, somebody with an agriculture background to do agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a knowledge of the subject matter is a useful helpful tool to which now that minister will add his or her capacity to problem solve and apply critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think knowledge of the sector. We heard a very unfortunate disclosure by the minister, the now Minister of Information, just this past week, who was at the time of the incident the junior minister and the Minister of Education, and who had responsibility. It was the Minister of Education and youth, which it still is. And the portfolio for children's homes fell under that ministry.
Right.
And this minister was a general minister, and he has said that he did not know, he didn't have the technical knowledge about issues related to child care, and therefore is seeking to exonerate himself for the mishandling of a matter related to some benefactor who has now, it has not been discovered, has been interfering with young girls in his care.
Wow.
So your point about a technical knowledge, so whilst I do not accept the minister's explanation about his in relation to this issue, his disclosure raises the point about the importance and usefulness of technical knowledge for the area of responsibility you have. Any more than you wouldn't send an astronaut to do a surgery on a person's brain.
Indeed. And is disclosure, Anthony, you see, it has now opened the can of worm that we are now looking in from where we are this morning, because currently in Jamaica, I'm just going to use one or two ministries. When you look at the Minister of the Minister of National Security, he is a bona fide medical doctor. And the question has been asked over and over again, why isn't or why wasn't Horace Chang named the Minister of Health? And this is a situation where if you don't have the tools in the toolbox, how is it you're going to do the job, Anthony? You as an engineer, if you're given a task and you don't have the proper tool and the proper knowledge, you will not be able to complete that task. So again, as we examine what may be taking place soon in Jamaica again, because there's talk about it, ministries being shuffled here and there, ministers being taken from one portfolio to another portfolio. We are hearing word that Mr. Darrell Vars could just now be the Minister of National Security. That's just words. Well, it might not be true. But again, we have to look at this, and we just cannot use loyalty as our main source of selecting these ministers. Anthony Turner.
This leads me to this question. Good morning, Dr. Thompson.
Good morning.
So in the private sector, as I know it, there's typically a detailed job description assigned for each job. And, you know, it covers how success is measured in the role so that we can use it to determine performance evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the years, the media and members of the public, they have often called for job descriptions for ministers. And correct me if I'm wrong, I have never heard or seen a job description for any of the ministers to assist the country to better assist the performance or non-performance in some case of these ministers who, you know, a lot of times the only way we have to assist their performance is public opinion polls, which a lot of times not always are very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am asking you, you know, Dr. Thompson, do we have any job descriptions for these ministers so that we can hold them accountable? And a lot of them try to pass off the blame for their lack of performance to lack of resources, financial or manpower. So I don't know if you could answer that for me.
Yes, I think that it is certainly one of the areas of our governance arrangements that need urgent attention, that every minister should know what are the precise requirements of the job.
Right.
Of course, by virtue of it, the seniority of that job, there's going to be some level of generality and breadth to the portfolio and to the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be some specific measures of success.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, what are we seeing when this job is well done? What are the outcomes and the outputs when this job is done satisfactorily?
Mm-hmm.
The truth of the matter is, we do not have a system which requires the Prime Minister to assign job descriptions.
Mm.
And I believe that it is a role that the senior technocrats,
mm-hmm,
in the ministry should perform.
Mm.
And meaning to say that a person such as a cabinet secretary,
mm-hmm,
should exercise the agency and the initiative to push the cabinet to that place where they recognize the importance of those job descriptions, and that cabinet secretary would based on his or her grasp of the role and responsibilities of each ministry to prepare that and make that part of the public record.
Mm-hmm.
So recall that the current government did promise in 2016 that one of the first things that would be done, one of the deliverables of the first 100 days,
mm-hmm,
would be job descriptions for each minister.
Mm.
Frankly, I believe, which wasn't realized, but I believe that an even more advanced thinking would be that in your manifesto as a political party,
mm-hmm,
and this would go for both political parties,
right,
would be job descriptions for each of those ministries.
Mm-hmm.
And once you become government, you can then translate those promises and those platforms into policies. So it is a major deficiency. So we hear some people look on and say, this minister is doing very well, that minister is doing poorly. But what are the metrics beyond public perception and,
mm-hmm,
popularity polls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead, Dr. Thompson. Go ahead.
So I'm saying something. One of the, in addition to the initiative,
mm-hmm,
of a prime minister assigning ministers based on their technical competences,
mm-hmm,
should be a statutory requirement for job descriptions to be issued.
Indeed.
And mindful that there, and we spoke to the long-term constitutional change that should be made, so to remove representatives, members of parliament, from qualification to become ministers, so that they do their job of legislation and representation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But a prime minister could take steps, and I have written on this extensively, to upskill and build capacity among the persons he or she selects to be members of parliament, to members of the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, training should also be necessary in your role as a member of parliament.
Right.
So because there are certain fundamental skills you should have. There's a body of knowledge you must possess,
right,
as a member of parliament if you're to be effective.
Right.
And similarly, I mean, in several of the jobs I have done, I've had to go, despite my basic training,
right,
in whatever area, I have had to do specialized training.
Indeed.
Provided by the organization in order to perform a specific function.
Right, right.
And so every cabinet minister, so we have a Darrell Val being named, sorry, not being named, whose name is being thrown into the thing to become Minister of National Security. Where, if the Prime Minister were planning this thing out, he would know that if he plans to do a cabinet reshuffle in 2023 and is going to place this person there, Mr. Vaz should have gone to the National College for National Security, or to Scotland Yard,
mm-hmm,
or some other high-profile security
entity. Mm-hmm.
Entity, and spends, over a period of 6 months, spends several hours learning the fundamentals,
indeed,
of national security.
Indeed,
and the Prime Minister could do that without asking anybody permission.
Indeed,
right.
Indeed.
Similarly, he would send a Minister of Agriculture to Tuskegee College.
Indeed.
Tuskegee University.
Indeed.
To understand a bit more about agriculture. So part of our problem is that there isn't sufficient long-term thinking and strategizing.
Right.
We do kind of off-the-cuff reactive thinking rather than strategic planning.
Loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. Anthony Turner, yeah. I've known him for 45 years. I am now the Prime Minister of Jamaica. I want Anthony Turner to be my Minister of Finance.
Yes.
And no one is going to change that. We can no longer live by those rules. But you know, the computers are going to take over in 2 minutes. I want you to think about this. When we come back, we want to answer this. I want you to answer this because I keep hearing from you, the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister, the Prime Minister. You mentioned the Constitution, and we got that Constitution from Buckingham Palace. But the person in Jamaica that represents Buckingham Palace is the Governor General. So we want to, when we come back, we want to know the role of the Governor General in all of this. Then you also mentioned technocrats. I want to know what should be the role of technocrats, private sector, and civil society. What role should those three groups play in when we are selecting or assigning ministers to Ministry of Portfolio? Take a 3-minute break, Dr. Kanu Thompson, and think about those two things. The Governor General, because he represents Buckingham Palace, technocrats, private sector, and civil society. Should they all have a role in helping to assign government ministers to ministries with portfolio? Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio, and we are in our featured segment. A candid discussion this morning on Mic Check regarding how best the Jamaican government should determine or assign cabinet ministers to ministries with portfolio. Our very special guest is an author of 7 books and the 2020 most outstanding researcher down in Jamaica, Dr. Kanu Thompson from the University of the West Indies. Stay where you are.
East, and this is the Original Chronics representing, and I say, you're listening to Groovin' Radio with the Original Rasclem on 93.5 WVIP FM. Keep it grooving, and we will keep it moving all the time, every time. Ease out.
And thank you so much, Chronics, for bringing us up for the final 25 minutes of the Grooving Radio Experience presentation this Saturday morning right here on WVIP 93.5 FM. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, ladies and gentlemen. And our very, very special guest this Saturday morning, he's no stranger, Anthony, to Grooving Radio, is Professor Kanu Thompson from the University of the West Indies. Ladies and gentlemen, and the conversation this morning, an open and candid conversation regarding how best the Jamaican government should determine or assign cabinet ministers to ministries with portfolio right here on Grooving Radio. Welcome back, Anthony.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. As I welcome you back, Professor, I give you 2 things to think about right in the commercial break there. And I hope you're ready as we get started again in part 2 of our presentation here. And so far, Dr. Thompson, Professor Thompson, I can tell you the listeners are engaged to this presentation, you know, because even off mic, when Anthony and I speak about how our government in Jamaica select and assign ministers, it is something that, you know, we have spoken about over the years, and we have noticed that a lot of these ministers from time to time has no understanding or no full understanding on education background in the ministries that they place. And when we ask the question, why so? Why so? And who's there, Professor Thompson, to call these things out and ask the government to handle this in a better way? So one of the things I left you to think about in the break there is the role of the Governor General. Because some will say that the role of the Governor General is a ceremonial role. What is the role of the Governor General in all of this?
Yes, thank you very much. Permit me just to take 30 seconds to just make a little clarification. You refer to me being awarded the most outstanding researcher at the University of West Indies.
In 2020.
That is correct.
Yeah.
In 2020, that is correct. But for the Faculty of Humanities and Education.
Okay.
So these awards are done on a faculty basis.
Okay, great.
So I was a person in that faculty who received that award. My colleague over in medicine would receive an award.
Okay.
A colleague in okay, just to clarify.
Yeah, ma'am.
That's a single award. So quickly on the question of the Governor General, you raise an important question, and I don't know if you're either reading my recent writings or reading my thoughts.
Great mind thinks alike.
But I have been exceedingly unhappy as a citizen with the role of the office of the Governor General. And I say that notwithstanding the fact that I have been closely associated with and I've worked closely with at least two Governor Generals, Sir Howard Cook, now deceased, and Sir Kenneth Hall, who was the chair of, after he left the office of Governor General, was chair of the CCEP. So I make these comments not about them in their personal capacity, but about the office and the way it's structured. My good friend Sir Kenneth would perhaps be willing to accept a gentle critique. But the fundamental problem with the way the office is established within the Constitution is that it makes it not exclusively but largely a ceremonial role. So, for example, the Governor General, no matter how strongly he or she may feel about the performance or the conduct of a minister who in his or her office has acted improperly, the Governor General has no place to recommend to the Prime Minister, certainly not officially, that such a minister be replaced. I believe that in a more advanced approach to governance, the head of state, which is the Governor General, should have the power to recommend to the Prime Minister the removal from office of a minister whose, if the Prime Minister fails to do so, whose actions bring the office he or she holds into disrepute. All right? And in the construction of the Republic about which we have been speaking, I have proposed that the office of president should be supported by a presidential council made up of about 12 members, with the Governor General himself or herself being the 13th member. And those 12 persons would be named 4 by the leader of the opposition, 4 by the Prime Minister, and the other 4 by the Chief Justice. Or, if you will, you could split the those named by the Chief Justice into 2. So 2 named by the Chief Justice and the other 2 named by the public, by the head of the Public Services Commission. The reason for this is that you would want to empower the Governor General with such absolute powers that he or she then becomes the boss, so to speak, of the Prime Minister. But this Presidential Council is the one that would do the analysis of issues and provide guidance on improving governance, including the disciplining of the Prime Minister himself or herself, and the holding accountable the members of the Cabinet. So the answer to your question is that I believe under our current system of governance, the Office of Governor General is largely, by virtue of being largely ceremonial, is somewhat ineffectual. Mm. It is the case that the Governor General appoints persons to the Public Services Commission, appoints persons to the Electoral Advisory Commission, mm-hmm. and other important bodies. But the, I think a more critical role for the Governor General to play, mm-hmm. to play would be that of holding the executive mm-hmm. accountable for its performance, and particularly to ensure that in their exercise of their functions, mm-hmm. they act transparently, they act with probity, they act with integrity. It would be hard to it would be inappropriate, I think, to make the Governor General someone who can get involved in assessing performance.
True.
In terms of how well the job is being done.
Mm-hmm.
That is the role of the boss, the Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And the public would then, using those job descriptions, which indicate those measures of success, hold the Prime Minister to his word. But mm-hmm. in terms of the exercise of the functions of being transparent, acting with good judgment, and acting with discretion, and acting with integrity, the Governor General should be the person through that council.
Indeed.
That's my take.
Indeed.
You raise another question I want to answer,
yes.
if I might.
Okay, so let me just put the other question for those who
yes.
just joined us. The other question is, what role, if any, should the technocrats, private sector, and civil society have, if any, in selecting ministers?
Right. So at present, I believe that what the role could be is that of public advocacy and lobbying. But I believe a more important, a more helpful rather way of going about this is that under that revised constitutional arrangement that I'm proposing, wherein the cabinet is named from persons in the public domain who are not elected to parliament, what we should have then is a system similar to the United States, where the prime minister offers this person as a candidate to become minister of agriculture or minister of whatever, and a joint select committee of the house would then vet that candidate. And the vetting of that and that joint select committee could be so structured to include a representative from established organizations such as, so for example, if you're naming the Minister of Education, a representative from the a nominee or a representative from the organization representing teachers would sit on that joint select committee. If you're naming the Minister of Agriculture, a representative from the Farmers Union, the Jamaica Agricultural Society, would sit on that joint select,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So if you name a Minister of Health, a representative from the Medical Doctors Association would sit on that joint select.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have some rotating positions on the joint select,
mm-hmm.
but the primary membership of the joint select would be the elected members of parliament,
mm-hmm.
right? And the role of that joint select would be to interrogate, interview and examine this candidate's fitness for office. And that fitness for office would be based on three main criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Technical competence, past performance, and fitness, fit and proper. Fit and proper meaning that the person has no traces
mm-hmm.
of having been involved in corruption, has no connections with questionable groups locally or internationally,
mm-hmm.
and who has a record that is free from criminal traces.
Anthony, you hear all of that?
Yeah, man, very interesting.
Yes, you have a question for the Professor Anthony, because I certainly want to close out on constitutional reform, and also briefly, because we only have 10 minutes, I want to close out this morning, Professor, on the matter. About almost a year ago, the Prime Minister told the young prince to tell his grandmother, the late Queen, that Jamaica is moving on, but so far we haven't moved on to anything yet. Your question, Anthony?
Yeah, my question for you, Doctor, is that from I've been following politics, we've been hearing about cabinet reshuffle, and I just wanted your perspective on the whole issue of cabinet reshuffle. Is it because the minister is underperforming, or why do we always hear about this, and what's the purpose?
Right. So there are three reasons, in my experience, on observation perhaps more appropriately, there are three reasons a prime minister reshuffles a cabinet. The primary one, I think, is when he or she is looking towards the next general election, mm-hmm. and wants to place certain loyalists, RASGEM, in certain positions to strengthen the government's hand in preparing for the next election. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first reason.
Mm-hmm.
The second reason is where a minister is badly underperforming,
mm-hmm.
and connected to the first, having that person continuing in the office, heading closer to an election, could give the government, place the government in a position of unpopularity.
Mm-hmm.
A third reason, in my observation, is where the government wants to reward somebody who has been doing well, and therefore want to shift them to another ministry, mm-hmm. or bring them into the cabinet in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three main reasons. You'll have other reasons, such as, perhaps not as frequent, where there is pressure from outside.
Indeed.
Or from powerful groups locally,
mm-hmm.
that such and such a minister should be removed.
Mm-hmm.
And the prime minister complies with the expectations and wishes of these overseas influencers,
right.
or these local influencers.
Mm. An open and candid discussion regarding how best the Jamaican government should determine or assign cabinet ministers to ministries with portfolio. Our very special guest is Professor Kanu Thompson from the University of the West Indies. We're going to close on this, Professor. It's almost a year now. Almost a year now since a new ministry has been formed in Jamaica. The former Attorney General Marlene Malahu Fort was taken from being our Attorney General, and she is now over the ministry dealing with legal and constitutional affairs. The Prime Minister says, we're moving on. After 60 years, we're moving on from the monarchy to become a republic. Do we even know what kind of republic we want to become?
Right.
And we haven't heard anything much, if anything at all, from the new ministry. We have 3 minutes.
Yes. I would say that there has been a profound degree of underperformance in this area. One would have thought that within a few weeks of assuming the office of Minister of Constitutional Reform, constitutional matters, I think. I'm not sure full name.
Legal and constitutional affairs.
Constitutional affairs, right. One would have thought that within a few months of coming to that office, she would have outlined a pathway to leading the country from being under the monarchy to being a republic in, say, the spirit of a maximum of 18 months, so between 12 and 18 months. And that roadmap would be available on the ministry's website. You could go and you could tick off to see what we have done,
mm-hmm.
what's next, and how we are moving towards that goal.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of the matter, the minister has not done that, which is why, for example,
mm-hmm.
She was unable to answer the opposition leader's question in June of last year,
mm-hmm.
right? And is now moving quickly, mm-hmm. to begin to cast blame. And this must be said,
mm-hmm.
her assertion in Parliament was that she's unable to name the members of the committee because she hasn't gotten the names from the leader of the opposition.
Mm.
But she could have fixed that matter by responding to his letter.
Indeed.
In June of last year and saying, we're going, this is it or this is that,
mm-hmm.
And let's proceed, please name the persons. But the leader of the opposition has been waiting for those names, waiting for clarity, mm-hmm. on a number of things,
mm-hmm.
because in a decision on whom to select or nominate would be determined by the task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing the minister should have done is to outline the task at hand, the pathway, the roadmap, the sequence of steps to guide us.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be already 4 or 6 town halls across Jamaica.
Indeed.
In which citizens are being informed about the type of republic we are pursuing, the rationale for that type of republic, the role of citizens in making the selection, as the case might be, and other bits of information that we would need to have as citizens in order to determine whether the government is doing right by us.
Indeed.
But there has been no such dialogue taking place.
Right, right. And you know, Professor Thompson, Professor Rosalie Hamilton and her team over there at the Advocate Network, they have been calling for these things to happen. She was a guest of mine last week. She's a frequent guest here on Grooving Radio. And we have kicked off the conversation, the dialogue about what kind of republic Jamaica should become. Do we really know what kind of republic? We are talking about keeping the Privy Council as the High Court and all of that. We need to hear from the new minister. And she's no longer new. She's no longer new.
No,
Mrs. Marlene Malahufort. We need to hear from her. And she has been a guest here quite a few times. So maybe, Anthony, maybe we need to go out and try and get back Mrs. Marlene Malahufort to come and join us here. But we're going to end this morning, Professor Thompson, Canute Thompson. Come this Monday. Well, come tomorrow. Dr. Martin Luther King will officially, his family will officially celebrate his birthday. Come Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Come Monday. America pauses. And it's the only holiday. Let me make myself clear. It is the only holiday in the United States that is set aside for a single American, Martin Luther King Day. Be mindful, folks. Mm-hmm. Be mindful how we spend this day. Understand who Dr. Martin Luther King was. Understand what he meant to us. And to all Jamaicans, remember, Dr. Martin Luther King was a frequent visitor to Jamaica. And he said it was one of the only and the first place he went to and saw people in leadership that looked like him. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. So we will pause on Monday to remember Dr. King. I thank you so much, Professor, for joining us this morning. It is always a pleasure. And I've always said this, you know, you're coming back again. All right, sir? You're coming back again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank
enjoy
you
your
much.
Weekend. Take care.
Blessings to you, and enjoy your weekend too. Bye.
One love. Professor Canute Thompson from the University of the West Indies. Anthony, we're at that moment where we're going to have to wrap, huh?
Yeah, man. Very good discussion. And,
indeed.
I like because we've always heard about this shuffling and...
Yes, man.
Shuffling.
No more shuffling and hustling, Anthony. Huh?
All right.
Professor Ibo Cooper is celebrating a birthday today. He's 71. I think Ibo is 71 or 70. Yes, he's 71 years old today. And your good friend from Kingston College, Boris Gardner, he turned 80 years old yesterday. So birthday blessing and greetings. Talk to you later, Anthony. Grooving Radio was executive produced by Clement Heumann, Christopher Roberts. Grooving Radio was hosted by Ras Clem. Contributing to a presentation this Saturday morning, we have to go back to our musical presentation, where we featured one of Rolling Stone's 200 best singers of all time, Dennis Emmanuel Brown, the number one singer out of Jamaica. In our community engagement segment, yes, Mr. Stafford Grant joined us as their team present a coding workshop. Call Mr. Stafford Grant at 484-767-4543. That is 484-767-4543. We got the news courtesy of the Jamaica Gleaner, Jamaica Now, with Mr. Joe Von Johnson. Anthony Turner joined us for ER Report, and then he stayed with us for the entire duration of our mic check presentation. An open and candid discussion regarding how best the Jamaican government should determine or assign cabinet ministers to ministers with portfolio. Joining me this morning was author of 7 books. Yes, Professor Canute Thompson from the University of the West Indies. Waiting on the other side of the 11:30 hour, it is going to be the Wake Up Radio team. The jam comes in at 1, at 6 p.m. Link Up rolls in, and at 8 p.m. the Soundchat Radio team will take you up until midnight tonight. My name is Rasklem. I'll see you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. It's official. You can now listen to Groovin' Radio on Groovin' Radio NY.com.